I'd like to convene the Finance Committee this morning. And we do have a quorum present, and I know Representative Benson has been here for some time, so I assume he's had a chance to review the minutes.
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the minutes for Tuesday, March 24th, 2009.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The first bill before us this morning is 1756, and Representative Murphy, would you care to move the division report?
Mr. Chair, I move the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division Report for House File 1756, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1756, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Camp, if you'd care to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill is very straightforward in the sense that it just expands the Public Facilities Authority opportunity to provide grants for clean water and clean drinking water, as well as making sure that the loan conditions are such that we can utilize all the Reinvestment Act of 2009 for those projects. And I've got Mr. Coleman here with me who can kind of go over some of the details with you.
Okay, Mr. Coleman.
Okay. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'll just go through the bill quickly. Section 1 and Section 2 are almost identical. Section 1 is clean water. Section 2 is drinking water. And what it allows us to do is make 30-year loans instead of 20-year loans on these projects. It helps spread out the monthly debt service. And we put as EPA allows us to go up to 30 years for disadvantaged communities, and we've defined disadvantaged communities as communities with water and sewer rates in excess of 1.4% median household income. So we added that to the statute to allow us to do that. Section 3 is where the stimulus funds actually come into being for both clean water and drinking water. The federal law requires at least 50% of the funds be used for grants. And that is in Subdivision 1B. And in Subdivision C, what we're asking the legislature to do is criteria is provide a base grant of 20% for all the projects that use the stimulus money as kind of an incentive to get them moving forward, as well as cover some of the additional costs associated with reporting and requirements in the reinvest or the stimulus bill. Subdivision D1, we're talking a base grant of 20% up to $2 million. We're on clean water or for the drinking water program. And then item number two, we're using the 1.4% median household income again to provide grants once the city hits 1.4% median household income. For operation, maintenance, and debt service, we increased the grant to 80% of the cost over that. So, very similar to the wastewater infrastructure formula we used to use, and it's the same that we use for drinking water for disadvantaged communities currently. So we're not trying to reinvent policy, but reestablish what we did have under the WIF program. The drinking water is identical. In Subdivision 2, we use 6% grants. I forgot to mention the 20% grant for the funds have to be used for green infrastructure, which would include stormwater, energy-efficient measures, and EPA is coming out with a fairly lengthy guidance on what those activities are, items that will reduce municipal drinking water, such as meters and more efficient piping to let the flow of drinking water go through. On stormwater, they're talking a variety of things from septics, which keep and retain the water and allows the water to go into groundwater to stormwater treatment, which things like rain gardens and things that would actually retain stormwater and recharge groundwater and let the earth treat it rather than go into rivers. Energy efficient measures such as cogeneration at wastewater treatment plants or just more efficient pumps, so they have to be fairly significant. But those are the green infrastructure type things that they'll be coming out in their guidance. And we are requesting that 25% of the what we find is the green or what qualifies under that be a grant and then the rest loan. So it's just a combination of the two. And that's basically the bill, Mr. Chair. There is a cap on the supplemental grant when we hit the 80% of $4 million. So in total, a city that could get a grant up to $6 million. This is a fairly significant and high cost. So, and after that, we assume they'd have to, if they need more grant funds, they'd have to go up after other programs. So.
And Mr. Coleman, if I recall when you and I talked the other day then about the hearing, this one is time sensitive.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Right. We do have several projects that actually have bid and waiting to award contracts, and we also have another roughly $200 million worth of projects that will probably go before the end of June. So the sooner we get the bill out, the faster we can get these contracts out and projects underway. We also intend to do another $2 million before the end of the calendar year for a total of about $400 million, which is in a normal year, we do about $150 to $180 million worth of loans, and we've already done $140 this fiscal year. So it's a sizable increase in what we'll be generating as far as projects go.
Okay, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Coleman, is this handout that we have in our packet, it says PFA on a spigot, is that from your office?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Coleman, under the requirements, the third bullet, all projects must comply with, is that a federal requirement of the use of the money, or is that a component that the state is attaching for the use of the money?
Mr. Coleman.
Mr. Chair, that is a requirement in the federal act that all infrastructure projects must comply with federal Davis Bacon wage rates, as well as the Buy American Iron, Steel, and Manufactured Goods.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question, Mr. Coleman. These dollars sound like they're 100% for capital projects. Is there any requirement that these capital projects do project ongoing operating expenses that will be incurred by the local unit of government that takes this capital project money?
Mr. Chair, that is a requirement in our rules that they have sufficient funds to operate and maintain the system as well as debt service. And we literally require them to have audits through the life of the loan to document that their system operates in the black. So it is a contract requirement that we have in the rules.
Thank
to
you,
cover
Mr.
that.
Okay, any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Murphy renews her motion that the House File 1756, the First Committee on Engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to Ways and Means. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you. And the next bill will be House File 925 by Representative Sertich, the official measure of unemployment explained, and that went to Representative Rukavina's division. Representative Rukavina moves the division report on House File 925, the First Committee on Engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 925 be recommended to pass and put on the
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Sertich. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I have a bill before you today dealing with the unemployment rate and how we calculate it. Members, right now, the unemployment rate in general actually is a key indicator of our labor market performance. and defines what an unemployed individual is. Right now we use a used tree rate, and there are six different rates. And all this information is collected from the Bureau of Labor Statistics in Washington. And right now every state actually uses a U3 rate, which is kind of the middle ground. And I've included within your packet an article from the Wall Street Journal discussing that there's a broader unemployment rate figures that we can use that I think would be helpful in our public policy discussion in how we help those that are both unemployed and underemployed. And that's by using what's called the U6 measure. And the U6 is the broadest measure of unemployment, and it actually takes into account those that are unemployed, collecting unemployment benefits, but those that are also underemployed, looking for more hours or have barriers to employment like transportation, child care, and the like. Members, our own state agency gets this data now from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. This would just formally ask them to put a metrics or a model together to quantify this information, to make it available to us publicly, monthly, so that we can make better decisions on workforce issues. And I think the more information, the better about who is unemployed and underemployed in this state.
Okay. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sertich. This bill came before me when I was on the Bioscience and Workforce Committee, and I had a couple questions that I wasn't allowed to ask you there, for whatever reason, hard to say. You know, I think this is an interesting tactic, but I guess the biggest problem I have is I'm trying to understand how would you measure these things? How do you, when you're talking about the lack of child care or transportation, or you have part-time but you'd accept full-time, would it be full-time for any job or full-time only in the career of my choice? Or would it be, if I have lack child support, how is it determined if the person's being honest or if it's accurate? Or I just don't know that this really is a really good judge of what that real unemployment is, and I'm just wondering if you could comment on that a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin. This is all done already. This information is all collected by the Bureau of Labor Statistics with the Federal Bureau of Labor monthly, and they do a survey of citizens. And so that the data is collected. Are folks being honest? That certainly could be a discussion we could have, but it's the best data we have. We use that same data to compile our unemployment rate right now. As far as this being the best measure, the broadest measure, you may disagree with that, but I have the Wall Street Journal, I believe, on my side on this one, who says that we should use as much information as possible when we make these decisions. So we already are using much of the information that's gathered. This would just add a little bit more questions and a little more depth into our understanding of why people are either unemployed or underemployed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, Representative Sertich, when we talk about the federal unemployment numbers, would these numbers, these measurements still be used? So in other words, I'm assuming this would bring the unemployment rate up quite a bit in Minnesota as compared to other states. So how would this match, I guess, with federal numbers? Do we still find those in federal calculations? And then if you could answer that, and I also wanted to touch again on the same problem I had in the last committee this was in. You talk about this being on 3.18 official forecasts. I'm not quite understanding how this can be official. If you talked about how they're different, you didn't talk about it today, but you talked about how there's U1 through 6 and how we can use one U6, but then can also use U3. And I'm trying to understand if this is the official number and we're going to use these part-time measurements and it's going to be much higher, I think it's going to make us look much worse when you're looking at it from the federal numbers. And I have a real problem with the number of official, because to me that's, if you're talking about something official, that's what you're sending to the federal government, and that's what they're going to use.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, to your second question first, this is the most comprehensive measure, and it will look like more Minnesotans are unemployed because more Minnesotans are unemployed than what is being counted right now, and I think we should just be open and transparent with that information. This does not preclude the Department of Employment and Economic Development from giving the U3 number to compare apples to apples with every other state that collects the U3 data. So it would, I think, enhance our ability to do our job, because our state agency would still give the apples to apples, the U3 data that every other state collects, but we would just have a model in place to delve further into this information to make better policy decisions.
Thank you. I guess I would ask our research staff to look into that word, because I just do not see how it's possible to have two very different official numbers. It's either one or the other. And if this is the number we're using and we're going to have 15% unemployment as compared to 7% in other states, or 8 or 6 or whatever, I guess I'd like an opinion from staff on that word.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I did actually amend the language to that concern and work with our staff to hopefully clear that up. But as far as discussing with, the language has changed since you saw it in the Bioscience Committee. It actually, I put an amendment on there in Representative Rukavina's committee. So the language is a bit different than what it was before. But I've been assured that they will still deliver the U3 information, and so we can compare apples to apples. This would just make sure that we also have the U6 information available to us.
Representative Pepin, that's it. Representative Sim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sirdich, on page 3, lines 19 and 20, getting back to the data on workers who are employed on a part-time basis but would prefer and accept full-time employment. I understand your testimony that this is already being collected. My question, is it collected on a state level, or is the Federal Bureau collecting this? And would there be additional cost to the state if we brought this down to a state level, trying to get more data aggregated specifically from Minnesota?
Representative Sirdich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins. It is collected by the federal government state by state. Because the sample size is small, and not just in U6 but in U3 as well, the state agency has to develop a model to extrapolate the information and make it more broad. So they would have to develop that model within our deed agency as well. I'm hopeful they can do that with their existing resources.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sirdich, then, is that when the model is developed, I'm not just trying to get an understanding how this works. Is it then up to the employer to seek out the survey respondents within their business? Is it the employer's responsibility to get these surveys to their part-time staff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, actually, employers have to fill out these surveys, and it has nothing to do with their part-time staff. Employers have to deliver information. Many are signed up on and actually my business as well, where I'm the business manager, I have to fill out this form monthly and deliver it to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. There is no added responsibility for businesses, and there is no direct line between the businesses and either their employees or their part-time employees. All of this data is sent to the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Sirdich, I note that you're asking that the department create this model by July 1 of 2010, and I suspect that's at least in part to avoid any problems with a cost in this biennium. My question, though, Representative Sirdich, is I don't see a fiscal note here. Do you know from the department, I know you said you hope they can do it within their existing resources, but have they indicated what this may or may not cost? And I have another question maybe for you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sirdich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Colts, they had indicated that there would be some cost involved in this. There has been no fiscal note so produced at this time that I'm aware of.
Mr. Chair, maybe a question for you if it's appropriate. I know that we passed and the governor signed the bill that's going to require us to have a four-year balanced budget, and I know that both you and Chairman Solberg are concerned about tails, and I realize this doesn't have a fiscal impact as it's currently drafted in the existing biennium, but it will have one, or at least potentially have one in the next biennium. How do we as a committee and we as a House intend to deal with that issue? If somebody seeks to put off an expense into the next biennium and we have to produce a four-year balanced budget now, how are we going to deal with that?
No. Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, if you look at 2010, that is within the existing biennium. So this is not putting it off. I think your assumption is incorrect. It's within the existing biennium. It's just, I hope, within their existing resources, much as when they developed the model for U3.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's the Monday morning cobwebs and not enough coffee. I thank you for the correction, but
Your question is more 12 and 13.
It is, yeah. Well, I suspect that we may see this again, at some point. So, Representative Sirdic, I apologize for implying you were trying, if there was an implication that you were trying to push it out, I apologize for that. That is a question I think that this committee needs to struggle with a bit, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm also curious as to the status. Has a fiscal note been requested on this, and will there be one? It sounds as though there might be a cost.
Just got a note that a fiscal note wasn't requested, but that Representative Sirdic has asked the department, apparently. Is that correct? For a fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, I have not asked for a department for a fiscal note. I would assume that they would come forward with one if there would be significant costs. I'm hopeful that within the existing budget of DEED, they can find the resources to develop this model.
Okay. Let's see, who's next? Oh, Representative Clark.
I know you probably, you definitely weren't here, Representative Sirdic, when I think in the 80s, we had this much more comprehensive data at the federal level. And I think when Ronald Reagan came in, he moved to remove the discouraged workers from the list of unemployed, so we can no longer track them. And I just want to say I really, so I think in a way what you're doing is you're returning us to a fuller type of collection of data that we used to have before, and we have at the federal level as well as every state level. So I just want to thank you for that. I think it will help us in terms of our planning. We need to know.
Okay, Representative Jeff Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the issues have been spoken to, but the one that I have at this time, though, has more to do with making sure that all the data is in. And one of the things in the past that I've realized is you have employees with employers. But you also have people who are fully employed who are more in a situation of self-employed. They're a sole proprietor. And oftentimes, especially in a recovery, you will have, or especially they'll lose a job, and they'll maybe, but in the meantime, they start a new job. Have you included those pieces of data and information in this as well? Or only focused on employees in the kind of the traditional term?
Mr. Chair, FM Kiffmeyer, actually the Bureau of Labor Statistics in Washington, the federal agency, does do follow-up phone calls to ask about these issues. All I include is the data that's already being collected by the federal government. We don't do any data collecting ourselves. We receive this data from Washington, so I'm not trying to manipulate that data in any way. It's just collecting as much data as we can from the federal government. We cannot change any of those collections on a state-by-state basis, but we do need a model to extrapolate the information because of such a small sample size.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I know we can't see well here, but thank you very much. I appreciate that, but as long as we're having a discussion of the model, I know you are dealing with that, which is,
sure,
and kind of doing that, but I don't think that should keep us from doing a little bit better, and especially when it's a percent and a ratio, so it really does matter, the larger pool, because it's a percent of that larger. And so those ratios will be affected if you don't include the true sense of who's employed or who is working, and maybe their own, again, their self-employed or proprietor. Do you know if any of this does include that, or is that something that's been missing from both federal and any state collections?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't know the complete answer, but I do know they do follow-up phone calls to many of these unemployed individuals to find out if that be the case. That maybe, because I agree with you, I think that this is a time of entrepreneurship. You know, many good engineers who potentially are laid off right now are going to now start their own company and bring their own ideas to the market. So I think much of that data could be garnered with those follow-up phone calls that do happen from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics.
Okay, let's see.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
That concludes that question. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shemansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Sirdic. My question looks at the expansion of measurements of unemployed, underemployed in terms of the previously retired folks that now, because of declining assets in their retirement plans, are may be considering coming back to work. Will this also be looking in that area and starting to count those people that retired once but now may want to re-enter the workforce?
Mr. Chair, Representative Szymanski, depending on when they retired, yes. If they retired rather recently, I think that they would potentially be included in somebody who's looking to work more more hours or look for full-time employment. So there is the potential there to find out what's hidden in that population. If somebody's been retired for a very long time, it'd be very hard for them to be a part of this data.
Thank you.
Okay, with that,
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosalina. Representative, how did you say you were going to extrapolate the information? this Obama thing or what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, perhaps we could talk to Joe Begich about that later.
Okay, with that, seeing no further discussion, Representative Rukavina renews his motion that House File 925, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
We now have House File, you're welcome, 116 by Representative Ward.
Mr. Chairman.
The Type 3 school bus.
Chairman, I move the K-12 finance, Education Finance Division report for the House File 116.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson?
I move House File 116 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Ward, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You are about to hear about House File 116 today, and you probably have heard about it prior to today. This is a bill that has many school districts have been placed an unfunded mandate by them, fiscally strapping, putting them in, you know, in a bad situation, financial situation. Last session, legislation was passed to address safety issues about the Type 3 school vehicles and drivers which came from an Office of the Legislative Auditor report. It required drivers to comply with a number of requirements, including a physical and drug test. The previous authors of the bill, Representative Bigham and Senator Olsen, intended to exempt school employees who are temporarily or incidental drivers of Type 3 vehicles from the physical and drug testing requirement through language referred to in the previous bill as normal duties. However, the term normal duties was interpreted by the Department of Public Safety differently than the legislative intent of the authors. The Department of Public Safety's interpretation requires school districts to have anyone who may possibly drive a Type 3 vehicle meet these requirements, even though as regular school district employees, many of those requirements had already been met by regular employment with the school district. This resulted in a couple of unintended consequences. It placed significant financial hardship, as I already mentioned, on many school districts in the form of unfunded mandate. It also had those staff that had a physical handicap, whether it be deaf students, staff from the deaf school, or I have a coach in the Crosby School District who has been a golf coach for 30 plus years who has an artificial leg, and all of those people that have some type of physical handicap were also told that they could not pass the physical and would not be able to drive the Type 3 van, although they could drive a school bus, which makes no sense to me. So it had some unintended consequences resulting from that, especially for those folks that were coaches and advisors that were going to temporarily or incidentally drive the students. House File 116 attempts to fix this problem while still protecting the safety of our children. It will bring the law back to its original intent by requiring that anyone who is, and this is where we change the language, solely hired employed for the sole purpose of driving a Type 3 vehicle must meet all of the requirements. Members, I have other parts of the bill that have been changed since last year that only improved the bill further this year, and I will stand for any questions at this point.
Okay, are there any questions?
I'll see none then. All in favor of the motion that House File 116 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion will carry.
Mr. Chair, members?
Don't go too far. We're going to drop down, being that you're there already, to item number 10 on the agenda. The might just mention, members, we are being taped, so we're on, live on TV, so conversation.
But I hope everybody heard me.
Well, I didn't, but just want to remind folks. Representative Ward is going to present House File 2073, so while you're here at the table, why don't we move down to that one. Representative
Benson? Mr. Chair, I move K-12 Education Finance Division report for House File 2073.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson?
I move House File 2073 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you'd care to explain the bill.
Just real quickly, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Riley's bill. She is with her mother today in a nursing home care meeting, so she was not able to attend. That's why I'm pinch hitting for her. And all the bill does is it removes a obsolete reference, crosses out for fiscal year 2006 and later. That's all it does is remove that obsolete reference. Ask for your support.
Okay, any discussion, Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Ward, same question I asked in committee. Is Tom Dewar okay with this bill?
I believe so, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Seeing none then, and all in favor of the motion that House File 2073 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Nope.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
And we'll now go to... I didn't sign the last copy of that yet. Yeah. House File 1048, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report.
Okay, the division report has been moved. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina?
I'll move House File 1048 be recommended to pass and re-refer to Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Reinhardt, if you'd care to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1048 extends unemployment benefits to workers with reduced hours who participate in targeted training through the WIRED federal grant program. WIRED is the Workforce Investment in Regional Economic Development. In Minnesota, this program has been branded as the Renewable Energy Marketplace, with 16 projects funded in a 36-county area with the goal of supporting industry-led partnerships that will enhance the renewable energy industry. The extension of unemployment benefits is offered as a variation of the shared work plan in Minnesota Statute 268-135, which was enacted in 1994 to reduce layoffs. The impetus for this bill came from a Mankato company, VTech Incorporated, that designs and manufactures component processing equipment. Their concern about losing members of high-tech teams as their business took a downturn led to a conversation with the Workforce Center and then Deed. The WIRED program provided the opportunity for workers to get additional training, but reduced hours might lead many of these highly skilled workers to seek other employment. This proposal of a pilot project under the Shared Work Program allows these workers to receive unemployment for the hours that they are in training. This allows companies to temporarily reduce their costs while maintaining their high-tech teams. The fiscal note for the bill is $680,000 in unemployment benefits recouped over a four-year period from participating employers. Lee Nelson from Deed, as well as Teresa Kitteridge from the WIRED program, are available if there are questions.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, is this going to make our already strained unemployment system even more strained? Is it going to add further stress? I mean, we're already at a point where, as I understand it, we're likely to have to start borrowing money from the federal government. And how much more quickly is this going to require us to do that? I'm not sure I have a problem with it. I just, you know, as we add more people in these already difficult times, is that really a good idea?
Thanks. Representative Rukavina wanted to chime in on this one, if you want to. Representative Rukavina.
Representative Coles, I think that Steed is not opposing this bill, and we all knew, even without the financial crisis we're in, that our UI fund was going to be borrowing probably after December or so of this year. So I think if you look at the minimal cost of it, I believe Mr. Nelson's in the audience, and they don't oppose this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, my understanding is this will maybe make 5 to 10 minutes sooner our reduction, our need to borrow to fill this, the unemployment fund. But Mr. Nelson is certainly welcome to come down, but this is a very modest amount, and I'll tell you it's probably targeted much higher than might be used, because many of the companies that will be eligible under WIRED are already eligible under the shared work plan, so they can apply under current law. But this is meant to cover companies that don't fit in the strictures of the current shared work plan.
Representative Cole.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brannick may have just answered my next question, which is, are we setting a precedent through this program that, I realize it's a relatively small amount given the size of our UI fund, et cetera, but, you know, are we going to, Representative Champion and Representative Garofalo and Representative Howes, are they going to have the next proposal to extend this? And are we setting a precedent that we may not be able to stop?
Representative Brannick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, that's actually a very good question, and I'd welcome Lee Nelson if he wants to comment on it. But before he does, what I'd like to say that Deed is already interested in rewriting the current shared work legislation, because it could better meet the needs of the state. The goal of that legislation is to address situations where we might lose employees, and companies who are team building might lose their capacity to hold on to those teams. So while it might put some additional burden on the unemployment fund, its long-range capacity for job creation is much larger than that burden.
And it's my understanding that federal stimulus funds mitigate much of the cost of that grant, or for the fund overall. Okay. Representative Rukavina.
Well, no, Mr. Chair, I was just going to reemphasize to Representative Coles that there was already statutory language preparing, and this just expanded it because they had this grant from the federal government. But I would hope that Representative Garofalo would put in a bill to expand unemployment insurance for people. I'll second co-author of it.
Did you want to hear from Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, if Mr. Nelson could give us some brief testimony about the issue, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Nelson? We do have a couple of other bills, so if you could be brief, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Representative, to your question, the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund is currently projected to go into deficit status, I call it permanent deficit status, about the 1st of December. If the stimulus bill passes, which is pending on the floor of each body, the trust fund will receive an additional $130 million, which will delay its deficit until about the 1st of January of 10. This bill, if it passes, there's some other bills already pending dealing with the shared work program, but if this bill passes in its current form and the other shared work provisions do not pass, it'll add a little additional strain. I might correct the representative. I wouldn't say 5 or 10 minutes. I would probably say 2 hours earlier. We're currently paying out $8 million a day in regular UI benefits, and this would pay an additional $650,000 over a course of a year.
Mr. Nelson, I think I'm more concerned about the precedent issue, and I understand that there's just, I don't understand the tiered work system. I don't need an entire explanation about it, but can you give me some assurance that we're not going down, setting up a slippery slope here?
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Cole, the shared work program, this particular grant is available, I believe, to 38 different counties. We think it's going to be very narrow. We believe that the WIRED program is a good program to help training for incumbent workers. We think it strengthens the workforce. We're hoping WIRED is a success, and that's why the Unemployment Insurance Program and the administration drafted this legislation and fully support it. We think it strengthens Minnesota businesses and the training workers have and strengthens our workforce.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I fully appreciate whether we're setting a good or bad precedent here, but I think that's fair enough. Thank you.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Beinhart, who provides the skills training that's available to these workers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, it depends on the granting agent, I mean, who the partnership is with. In this case, the particular company I'm talking about, BTEC in Mankato, it's South Central College, but each grant is unique in terms of, it's a public-private partnership, and if you'd like a little more detail on the 16 projects that are currently underway, I'm sure that Teresa Kitterich would be glad to provide that.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. And so it is an institution of higher learning. I guess I am just curious, and most importantly, about the precedent that Representative Coles was getting to. As I look at paragraph A of the bill, which I find an interesting paragraph to be put into legislation in the first place, but that's neither here nor there. On lines 1.9, to enhance the skills of employees. Now, I'm thinking of my chosen profession, which is education, and educators are always going back to school to enhance their skills. And they go back to school, they get that enhancement at institutions of higher learning, and yet they have to arrange their schedule so it's done in the late afternoon, it's done in the evening time, when in fact it might be a whole lot easier to take these classes, say in the afternoon, and then collect unemployment for the half day that they're out of the classroom. Again, you know, it is a precedent, and I know this program that we're talking about isn't set up for public school educators, but particularly in outstate Minnesota, Representative Beinhart, you're aware of this, a teacher who is licensed in physical science, you know, needs a separate certification for life science, for instance. You know, we need those skills in outstate Minnesota. So I guess I am concerned about the precedent nature of this legislation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I'd be glad to talk to you in more detail about the WIRED grant program, but you certainly are raising reasonable concerns, but I think it's open to discussion whether that this type of precedent is constructive for job creation and would actually be a benefit to us in our current economy. But this is very targeted toward a federal grant program that is business-oriented. It's the employer who is seeking a very specific kind of retraining of its workforce that will allow these high-tech teams to stay together and continue to take advantage of the entrepreneurial opportunities in the renewable energy industry. So I think you have to look at it as a very specific targeted program. And if it has precedent, I think that's open to discussion, but this legislation is very narrowly constructed.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then the motion is renewed by Representative Rukavina that House File 1048 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have House File 927 by Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report.
Okay, Representative Rukavina moves the division report for House File 927, the Third Committee Engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina.
I'll move House File 927 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations report.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Mahoney, I understand you have an author's amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. I know it's not the nature of this committee to add amendments, but this is purely technical, so I was hoping you'd allow me to do that.
Chair, I'll move the Amendment A3.
Okay, the motion is before us for Amendment A3, and Representative Mahoney, if you'd comment, you mentioned it was technical.
That is correct, Mr. Chair and committee members. The A3 amendment, page 4, lines 2 and 12, I don't know how it got in there. They talk about plumbing contractors. We don't have plumbing contractors in the state. We have master plumbers who are considered contractors, so we're just changing the language there. On line 1.6, it puts in this, it deals with subdivision 6. You'd have to go to line 2.4 on the amendment, where it underlines clause 6. It's just referencing back to the new language on page 4, line 11. So it's just a reference. On the amendment on page 2, line 16, it talks about on page 5, line 11, it takes out the word, after the word certified, it inserts by the commissioner. And that is because the commissioner is in charge of certifying these licenses. The plumbing board primarily just does rulemaking and adopts the code. So not substantial changes, it just changes, makes it a clearer language and statute for the commissioner.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill has some fee increases in it and licensing fees. The preliminary fiscal note calls for in 2010, I think it's $15,000, and in 2012, it's $15,000 expenditure, and in 2012, it adds $10,000 back in, causing the state to have to, or the department to have to absorb $5,000. The department is here, and they will attest to the fact that they can do that. They can cash flow that. If I will go over the bill in terms of where those dollar figures are. On page 5, line 30, it talks about a $30 per year MedGas certificate issued by the plumbing board, and I think the amendment changed that. Yeah, by the commissioner. And all bodies are fine with that. The problem comes that medical gases, there was an argument because it was not in the code, which this bill does, puts it into the code through that licensing. No one knew who was supposed to or who was responsible for inspecting pure oxygen in hospitals, whether it was the plumbing code or the fire code. And now we're just trying to clarify that, and the fire codes are, firefighters are fine with this, or fire marshals are fine with it. Then there is a fee for a water conditioner license. It requires a licensing of water conditioning contractors and installers. There is a a conditioner's license. There's a $50 test and a $70 licensing fee for the contractor, and there is a $50 test and a $35 fee for licensing for the installer. Pretty much all parties are in agreement and okay with that. I've heard from large and small. Obviously, we haven't heard from everyone. There's an awful lot of installers and contractors in the state, but the majority are fine with this. We're trying to develop ways for the department to contact everyone, and they have told us that they will do as good a job as they can with it. They've done a good job with the restricted plumbers, but some people still have issues with it, and we're trying to work on those too. Then there is on page 11, line 22, perennial audits and team leader certification. 2003, we eliminated the ability for the boiler inspectors to do a national certification test for the 70 boiler manufacturers in the state of Minnesota. We have found that it costs $5,000 or better to bring a national certification company into the state to do that certification. The department assures me they can do it for $1,700, and they have the people, and they are willing to do it. We're just trying to save these boiler manufacturers and tank manufacturers money. That's the fiscal implication of the bill.
Let me know my motion.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at all of these fees, and I appreciate your conclusions and saying working to save people money, but I'm seeing a lot of these fees, and these are comparative to other fees, aren't additional new burdens when we got folks working like crazy to get things done, and now they're going to be facing, are any of these new fees, or they're just carry-forward fees from something else? I couldn't quite tell for sure from the language.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kiffmeyer. The only fee new to the to law is on page 5, line 29. It's a $30 fee per med gas license fee. This is a pretty small group of people, primarily plumbers that do it. I actually have talked to the unionized plumbers, and they're fine with it. I've not heard of any complaints from the others in the state, although I have made some effort to touch base with them. And again, that's a very small group of people. The water conditioning, those fees are in statute already. This primarily concerns people in towns under 5,000. There again, you've got a very small pool that we're working with. No one ever likes to put these in, but I think it's important now that we've got plumbing in towns under 5,000 have to meet the same standards as a town with 5,001 people in it, that potable water, that which we drink, needs to be underneath the same standards as our statewide plumbing code. It's a small price to pay for safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Representative.
Representative Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, to the wet conditioner, water softener?
That's correct.
Okay, this bill, Representative Mahoney, with this, I hate to ask you this question, but I'm going to ask you. I own a resort, got the cabins all hooked up, you know, to the one water line, but I want to put in a water softener or two to make my much better. Can I do it without a license?
Mr. Chair, well, I would expect that resort owner to be a restricted plumber, and this bill all exempts restricted plumbers from having to get that particular license. So then they would be able to put that in. But if they've thrown the letter that the department has sent to them twice now, the posted handbills at the supplier, the hardware store, and every place else, they might have problems. But we could deal with that.
as we move this bill forward.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Mahoney, that clears up a lot, and I think I know what you're telling me. You mentioned, and I thought I saw it here before, about getting the license requirement for to do this. You said there was an application fee and a test fee. Was that correct? And if so, to get that certified plumbing license, is there also a test for that other than a fee for the license, or how does that work?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, there's always been a test for water softener in cities over 5,000. The restricted plumber, we made way too easy. There is a test for the water conditioner, not exceedingly difficult. There is no test. You just have to document your past work experience for the restricted plumber's license. So this is a bit different.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other discussion or questions from the committee? Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I see we're transferring a lot of rulemaking to the plumbing board, and as we all know, rulemaking has the force of law. How are members of the plumbers board selected to serve on said board?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I believe they are, there are, that was set up in House File 1205 of 2 or 3 years ago. There are 13 members on the board. They are, their names are brought forth by associations in a variety of other places. I don't have that at hand. And then they are confirmed by the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or discussions from the committee? Yep. Hearing none, Representative Rukavina brings House File 937 to Third Committee Engrossment. 927, excuse me. Recommended to pass, we refer to Committee on State, Local Government Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections. As amended. Yeah. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No. Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members.
We now move to House File 411. Alden?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report for House File 411.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
And Mr. Chair, I'll move the House File 411 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Representative Alden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I have here today is the... I'll explain briefly that there was a... 2 years ago, basically, when the bovine TB thing was at its prime, there was a $100,000 exemption put aside for cases that did not fit under the bovine TB rules that were put up 2 years ago. It was brought on behalf of Representative Magnus, and I think there's... According to Dr. Hartman, who testified at the last hearing... In ag, there was only one time it's been used, and it was used for $28,000. So there's $72,000 still sitting there. What I ran into in the bovine TB area itself is a specific example, which I won't go into great detail, but what happened is the guy sold his cattle under the bovine buyout, which is the right thing to do. But when they got to market, even though they had been tested twice yearly at market, a couple of the cows turned out to test positive. So then he couldn't sell his cat, his steers, even though he was going to neuter them and everything else required by the statute, at market. He had to sell them as slaughter, which would be less money. So this bill is trying to get the guy the difference between the slaughter and what he would have got by selling the calves at market after he followed all the procedures correctly. Dr. Hartman testified, is left in charge of figuring out what the appraisal should be, and I believe he testified at the Ag Committee that the amount would be somewhere between 15 to 20 grand. It would be using money that's presently sitting in a special account for the situation that did exist and there would be money in that account to do that.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, Representative Junkie moves House File 411 to be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Yes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Thank you.
The next meeting for this committee will be at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 31st in 200. We'll be taking up the Omnibus Capital Investment Bill. With that, we will adjourn.